Welcome back to the Boys and Bolas podcast. We're down here in the barbershop studio. Jarrett, thank you again for joining me. Do you notice something in the background playing?
In the back?
What's?
Ground.
What's the... What do you hear?
Is that Top 4? It smells like Top 4. Sounds like Top 4.
Oh, guess who? You know, I talk a big game about Champions League not matter. Not making a big deal.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
Boy, were you happy.
Sweet to be playing on Wednesday night again. Just soak it in. We can soak it in together this time. We can soak it in together, my friend.
It's now inclusive.
Okay, that's enough of that. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're here. The season's over.
That was a pretty brutal cutoff. I was really enjoying that. I was in a zone there.
We can outro to it. I'll give you a little more taste at the end. I just wanted to give you a little taste of how I've been feeling.
Yeah, for everyone who didn't know, Jeff said I needed to hear something, and then he wouldn't tell me what it was, and then he blared the champions, and now I can't hear anything. So I don't know if you can be a deaf podcaster, but we'll try.
I know. I figured out how to share audio on Zoom, and now it's dangerous. I'm just gonna start looking for stuff up on YouTube and random sounds and audio files and the like. Have fun with that.
You're so welcome. For a guy who says the Champions League doesn't matter, you seem pretty excited.
I know. It was just a joke. Just kidding around. But I am excited. I was happy for the team. I was happy for the Tottenham Hotspur fan base as well.
Me too. I was worried about their mental health. If they had somehow figured out a way to drop it, it would have been so... When I say drop it, I mean somehow lose an Arsenal win. It would have been dark.
Just to set the scene, Diego, Jarrett, Jeff Cronin, and I went to Cleary's in Boston, the local Boston Spurs chapter where we meet regularly, weekly, to watch the games. And... I would say when we were driving there, I was not expecting as many people probably. I think you were expecting a lot, but the place is packed.
The place is packed, and it's pretty big. It was much bigger than just that one room, and I was expecting a lot of people. I mean, it's the last week of the Prem. It's 85, 80 degrees out. It's beautiful. You want to go watch that, get your buzz on, go to brunch, and then do whatever you want with the rest of your day. So it was great. Yeah. And it was, you know, I am not a Spurs fan, but I was super happy to see them win. And, you know, it was exciting. And I'm glad Sonny got the golden boot.
Tied golden boot. All, no penalties, though. All game open play goals. I will say that it's quite impressive to have to score two goals, basically, to secure the golden boot. He went out and did that, scored a brace. I mean, basically, he had... 5 or 6 chances probably in front of net because that Norwich team is not good. So if there was a game for him to score a bunch of goals, that was it. And he delivered. So happy for him. Kane won it last year, and there was a great picture of Kane kind of like handing the trophy over to Son. And that was nice. Mo Salah won jointly with him. He deserved it just as good. Originally, we thought that it went to the guy with the most, if you tied on goals, it would go to the guy with the most assists, but we were wrong about that. They just shared the award. And it was a good day. Lots of Tottenham Hotspur chanting in the bar, lots of yelling, lots of I had a hoarse voice last night from
did
all
you?
The yelling I was doing. I did.
You came? Oh, nice. It was a good event. I was impressed by the Tottenham faithful. It was very nice. I'm excited to go. I have not gone to the Chelsea bar in Boston. Or I've gone, but I went to watch a World Cup match, and it wasn't a Chelsea match. So I'm excited to go because I've been to many other Chelsea bars in other cities, and they're always fun, and it's good to see other people wear your jersey, and you don't feel like you're a crazy person. So that's good. I was really glad it didn't come down to the wire, and I didn't see a bunch of Spurs fans basically bump lines of Zanny from the bar because they were so freaked out.
I was literally having a panic attack before the game. I was not well. I was like freaking out. I was freaking out.
You couldn't put sentences together.
It was bad. We walked into that bar and it was solemn. It was very silent.
It was super quiet.
It was super quiet. People knew, like, we didn't want to say anything. Nobody wanted to get too excited nobody wanted to like jinx it, you know?
They were also playing a sci-fi movie, Valerian, which if you haven't seen, it's litty. And they were playing a sci-fi movie with no sound, so it's kind of a weird vibe to begin with.
Yeah, it was really interesting because every, you know, USA owns the Premier League rights now because NBC and all that stuff. And so they own all these channels. And so the games were on like, I guess the game was on like the golf channel, it turns out, for like one game was on the golf channel. I don't know which game it was, but people were mad. Like the golf channel was getting like harassed on Twitter about like, why are you showing soccer on the golf channel type things? Like, go watch the soccer. Literally, like, people were like typing the soccer channel. Like, they have no comprehension. Like, people who watch golf, like I like golf actually, so I'm not gonna trash all the people who watch golf, but there were a lot of people who were very enraged about they're not being like, why can't you put an LPGA tour event on, or like you know, Masters reruns or something? I was like,
Tiger from 99 or whatever.
Like,
it was
literally no comprehension of how like network TV works, or like sports, like other sports work.
You know what's crazy, and this is an admission, I actually enjoy watching golf. I find it to be awesome. Too. Which
it's
is so
really
weird.
Amazing.
I find it to be fascinating. I like watching tennis too, which is so weird. Well, I prefer either of those over many other US sports, being baseball and football.
Funny thing about golf is that I recently took it up, as I've mentioned on the podcast before, and I've been going to the driving range a little bit, trying to get back in the swing of things, as they say. And
Jesus Christ.
It's a dad pun.
I mean, you have three chances to be dad jokes, so that's fine.
So I was over my in-laws last night. There was like a little cookout, but the PGA Tour Championship was on, one of the majors. And it was crazy because the guy was winning by a stroke. All he had to do was par the last hole. Par it. He was up by one stroke. All he had to do was par the last hole. He absolutely blew it. He hit it into the drink first off his drive. Then he had to take a drop, and then he hit it like poorly. And so anyway, he double bogeyed it. And so the two guys that were tied for second, they leapfrogged him and went into a playoff, three hole playoff, and the guy, Justin Thomas, won. And it was quite fascinating to watch the end of it, that playoff.
Making a transition from everything you've just said, which I kind of blacked out on, sounded cool though. I don't know how you'd... I'm glad Spurs didn't do what you've just said, which is basically only have to make par, take a drop, i.e. that would have been a red card or something, in the first 10 minutes, yep. And then 80 minutes of stress. I'm glad Spurs didn't do that. Yeah, but I don't know how that guy messed up the par, had to take a drop. I mean, hitting it in the drink after what? I'm sure it was a 36 hole. So
the guy probably
35
played that,
holes
probably,
well.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that.
And he also played that hole like a bunch of times. He knew, and he has like a, I don't know, he has a caddy that tells him stuff, and he like has all the notes and
tells
he knows
him
what
stuff
to do.
Maybe not even golf related, just like stock tips.
Or like just like gives him shoulder rubs and makes him feel like a little bit better about the situation, but he just completely bungled it. It was an impressive like sporting disaster. But then Justin Thomas pulled it together, played like a perfect last like five holes basically, and won the thing. And that's a pretty big payday. That's like $3 million like for winning that thing. So
Jesus. Maybe yeah. We should have played golf. Transitioning back to the Lords game. Scoring three goals in 15 minutes is impressive, and we've been talking about that all day in the chat. And Nodder was originally like, oh, you guys can't say City's inevitable. And I'd say about 20 minutes later, we got him on the side that City is inevitable, because you give me $100 right now and you say who's going to win the league next year, even as a Chelsea fan, I'm a realist, City's going to win the league.
Absolutely.
They're keeping this team. They're going to sell a couple guys, pick up some other people, but they're picking up Haaland, who, other than Mbappe, is one of the brightest young talents I may have ever seen in my life.
They got him for 60 million, dude. They got him. That's a steal.
They got him for half of what Chelsea got Lukaku for.
Yep.
Do you want to start with talking about City winning the title? Where do you want to go?
Yeah. You know, I think that, so this is my take on it. I think that if City, it's a bigger story if City blew that game yesterday. Like the expectation was City was going to go out and win that game. And what did they do? They won the game. Okay. Yes, they did it. They scored three goals in 20 minutes. But look who they subbed on. Okay. Look who they subbed on in the 70th minute or the 65th minute. They subbed on Raheem Sterling, who's worth about, I don't know, 80 million pounds, 90 million pounds. He's a winger. He's an attacking player. He had that in the bench. Then you sub on Gundogan, who's worth around $30 million maybe. And you sub on, who's the third guy? Who's the host of this? Oh, Zinchenko. Who's worth another $30 million. Yeah. Who's an attacking player. Who's a winger. Who's basically a wingback. I mean, he doesn't really play as, but he can play as wingback. He had an assist basically on one of those goals. So the bottom line is, if you're a team that can put on $150 million onto the field, literally with a snap of the fingers, because something's not working out, you need to jigger things around, and you're surprised that you scored goals against Aston Villa, who thought they had the game in the bag up 2-0. After Coutinho scored that second goal, they subbed him out, which I think that was a mistake. Then they put in Danny Ings, who's been awful, who's been absolutely atrocious, cannot finish, and they capitulated. They're not a good, they finished 14th. If there was a team to fall apart, which Aston Villa classically do, this happened to Spurs, same type of thing. They fell apart. They started out strong first half, as they always do. They take it people's ankles out. They play super strong. They bully you around, but then they don't have the legs, and they don't have the players to make it happen. So for me, I think it's an impressive sporting achievement, but it's all about context. This is a team that lost three games, two of them to Tottenham Hotspur, because Tottenham Hotspur parked the bus and played counterattack and exploited a few weaknesses of that second game when Kane was firing, you know? And so you're talking about a team that lost three games, scored over 90 points this season. I mean, to say that was like some kind of like amazing sporting achievement, you would have to be ambivalent to what they've been doing the whole season.
Which is dominating
the league.
They've been dominating the league. This is the stat that I dropped in the chat this morning. I saw it. It said Klopp's point total is 99, 97, 92. And out of that, he only got one Premier League title. And it said Fergie never got above 91, and he had 13 Premier League titles. The league is so ridiculous. This Liverpool team, if it weren't for Manchester City, would just be destroying, and they are already destroying everyone. But these two teams, I've never seen the league dominated by two teams. Like Chelsea used to win the league with like 83 points, 82 points, and it was close, and it would come down to the last day. But the league is so unbalanced at this point. I mean, it's out of control. Chelsea won the Champions League. And let me go back to my table here. They won the Champions League last year, which you could say they're lucky. You could say whatever they did. They won the Champions League. They finished 18 points, 6 games behind the second place team, behind Liverpool. Now, Chelsea dropped a lot of points at the end. It is what it is. But the difference now from...
It's a chasm.
The difference between from first... Second. Yeah, well, the difference from first to fourth, which they all go into this one tournament called the Champions League, from City to Spurs is 22 points. That is 7 1/3 games. That is insane distance in only a 38-match-long season. And Spurs is not like any walk in the park. Spurs is still top 15, top 20 teams in the world, easily. Like, it can easily be said. But the City teams are unbelievable. And so I was glad that we said what we said in the chat, because I just think it's ridiculous. You're right. I mean, you're bringing $150 million off the bench. You don't even bring Jack Grealish off the bench. He sits there while you do this. Who has – that's like more than, I would say, 90% of all English teams. If you go down from the Championship Tier 1, League 1, League 2, so on and so forth, it's an unbelievable situation what City have. And then they're basically going to keep this thing and move forward. But talking about the soccer, we could do it forever, and everyone saw that. The things I've seen on Instagram today have been out of control. Jack Grealish is like – no one's partying harder than Jack Grealish. And seemingly he played 16, 18, 20% of the games or the minutes total. He's like super drunk, funniest as hell in interviews. Maybe we'll put some stuff in the outro. He's just like grabbing the mic, saying ridiculous things. Let me pull up one of the quotes that he had. I put it on our Instagram in case you are dying to go read some quotes here. What did he say? He's at the thing, celebrate. I just think it's funny that like when people celebrate and they're like, you know, weren't really part of the group project.
I said earlier, I'm the coach. It's been brilliant to win my first title. I want to thank everyone, but the main person I want to thank is Bernardo Silva for coming off in the 70th minute because he was miles off it yesterday.
Exactly. Thank you for playing that. I don't know if you're going to add that in a post. He's just so, and his voice is gone. And he's just been yelling and like super drunk. I mean, this is what Jack Grealish wanted. So honestly, like, it's kind of cool that he got everything he wanted for Christmas. And then Riyad Mahrez is walking around like interviewing everyone awkwardly. And he asked Kyle Walker who's ever gotten by him. And they said like Ronaldo. He's like, no. And they're like, Messi, no. And like Neymar, no. And Grealish grabs the mic and he's like, I did when I got, when I was at Villa, and that's why Pep bought me. And everyone's like, cool, bro.
Cool, bro.
So anyways, I think someone needs to put together a compilation of Jack Grealish in the little celebration they have. I can't even imagine what he's going to be like just, I don't know, the next couple nights.
The thing that rubs me the wrong way with City isn't that they're like buying all the players and they make good buys and they obviously do good scouting. I mean, do they really? I don't know. Whatever. The thing is, they're buying players now just so other teams can't have that player. Like, that's why they bought Grealish. They didn't buy Grealish to like because they thought he was going to be a superstar. They bought Grealish so nobody else would buy him. Or nobody else would take him. And the same with Sterling. Like, the only reason they keep Sterling around is because, one, they can, because they can pay him. They can pay him and they can pay for him. Two, because why would they give one of the best wingers in the league to another team when they can just play him when they need to, when they play him every once in a while?
They got Sterling from Liverpool, and that was a long time ago. I think that
either
that
way,
one's...
At this point,
I'm saying like Liverpool Sterling. Are better for it. Liverpool are always better for selling Sterling and Coutinho. Even at the time, people are like, how are you going to sell them? They're like your franchise players. They were better for that 110%. And Sterling, I don't know how he stays. I don't really know what happens there. But we've now talked about City for a good amount of time. I think we should talk about the other side of the table, which was awesome to see Jesse Marsh staying up in the Prem. If you haven't seen his pump up pep talks from the locker room, check those out. That was just awesome to see. I'm just so happy that the American didn't come over, was in charge for, I don't know, 12, 13 games, and then took Leeds down. That would have been bad. It would have just been bad for like all American soccer everywhere in Europe. They stay up. Burnley, Watford, and Norwich go down. I don't think we should cover right now who's going to come up from the championship. We can leave that for another episode.
We don't know the third team. We only know that Fulham and
we'll cover it in another episode. And then Spurs are in Champions League. Who's in Europa League? Arsenal and United. In United. Arsenal, United are in Europa League. West Ham is in Conference League. Everyone else is still in the Premier League. Watford, Norwich, and Burnley are going back down to the Championship.
I asked a few people at the bar what they thought of Burnley versus Leeds, and everybody's like, "Oh, Leeds, hands down." Their fan base, they're kind of hooligans, but the style of play from Burnley is so poor. It's gouge your eyes out football. Like, just sit with 10 guys behind the ball and defend. Nobody wants to see that anymore.
It's a Mourinho wet dream, really. You know,
Yeah, except Mourinho actually had skillers on the team. Burnley doesn't have any skillers.
Skillers. You use that so liberally at this point. We asked on our IG, this is a question that you wanted to kind of go last time we didn't do it. You asked on our IG, who were the underachievers and overachievers of the season? And I want to share what some of the guests said on our DMs, and then we can go into our opinions. Max said, Everton underachieved. I would say Brentford overachieved. I really enjoyed watching Brentford this season. Let's see if they can build on it next season. Also love what Potter is doing at Brighton. Get so much out of a bare-bones squad. I think both exceedingly fair comments. John Scheimer also left a comment, per usual. See if I can find that. Oh, God. John just leaves us so many comments. John, if you're listening, I still owe you $100. I will get it out in pennies. I hate my life. Based on your assertions, Arsenal easily was the biggest overachiever by a country mile. Oh, I wonder why you'd say that, John. Manchester United were also the biggest underachiever by a country mile. By a mile. Not a country mile. By a mile. Also, yeah, so that's what John said. So he said Manchester United were the underachiever, Arsenal were the overachiever. Max said Everton were the underachiever and Brentford were the overachiever. And I felt like, Steve Holmgarden, Spurs are the overachiever of the year because of the absolute turmoil in coaching. So now that those sentiments have been shared, do you want to go first or do you want me to share my over-unders?
Yeah, I'll go first. I thought the biggest overachiever was Brighton, their best finish in the Premier League ever. They finished ninth. Graham Potter took a bare-bones squad, got them playing very, very attractive football, pretty good defensively, even after getting rid of Dunk. I think they get rid of Dunk, or they get rid of Dunk?
I thought they got rid of him in January.
Yeah, so I just thought that they, for what they had, and you know, you expect them to finish between 16th and 12th, and they finished 9th, and I think that is great for that team, and they'll be able to attract some players and keep some players and keep moving forward, and I think Graham Potter is going to stay. I think underachievers, absolutely 110% Manchester United. Manchester United were a dumpster fire towards the end. What they did, what they were not able to do, they weren't able to secure Champions League again. They basically leaned on Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, they got
so
Champions
hard.
League last year, so
I know, but they weren't able to get it again.
Okay, okay.
And they, with a squad that's worth around $850 million, and a signing in Pogba who hasn't been doing anything. Slabby looked really bad. Like, just a decline in all of the players that were playing at a very high level in the Euros. Like, Luke Shaw, where did he go? Wan-Bissaka, he was playing solid and fell off. You had, you know, Bruno Fernandes barely scored any goals. He didn't get any penalties this year, so he didn't score at all. You had no Cavani because they threw him away, because they threw him by the wayside because of Ronaldo. You had Ronaldo literally carrying this team. So it's a double-edged sword, right? So when Ronaldo's on your team, you're throwing away all of the progress you built, because you had Bruno Fernandes, you had Rashford, you had Martial, you had all these young guys, right? You know, all these young, this young talent trying to gel together. And you bring in the 37-year-old guy, the GOAT. Some say he's the GOAT. Some say whatever you call him. And it changes the dynamic of that team. And Ole didn't know how to handle it, and Ragnick didn't know how to handle it. And there's nothing taken away from Cristiano Ronaldo. He's a very, very, very good player, right? He finished maybe fifth in Golden Boot, or third in Golden Boot. I don't know. He finished up there. He had like 15 or 16 goals. But if you look at United, if he didn't score those goals, they would have been even further down the table. They would have been 10th, 11th, 12th. And so if you're spending that much money, if you have that big a fan base, if you have that big a history, and you did well the season before with essentially the same squad, you're expected to get fourth. And they didn't. They didn't. They underachieved. I think they really underachieved. If you look at some of the point predictions for the Premier League from the start of the year to the end of the year, the top four was pretty much dead on. They expected Spurs to get X amount of points. They expected City to win the league. They expected Liverpool to finish second, Chelsea to finish third. Spurs and Arsenal were like neck and neck. So actually, Arsenal kind of achieved. They did pretty much what they were expected to do. And given the sludge that is the Premier League from, I would say, 4th to 12th, they're better than most of those other teams. And so for me, Arsenal won the games they were supposed to win. They won a few extra games, like beating Chelsea, beating Spurs, you know. But they still lost the games they were expected to lose, and that would put you where right at fifth. So, John, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Arsenal. I think actually they're a very solid squad who just didn't come together at the end. You know, they kind of blew a chance, and so I think they achieved. So that's where I stand on it. I don't think they're like revolutionary picks or like anything, but I think that's it.
To differ from your underachievers, I also thought Manchester United underachieved, but Everton for me was the team that underachieved, because I picked them in my mind in the top 10 minimally, and they stayed up by what? How many points? Let me go to the bottom. They stayed up by four points off Burnley. This is a team that's the longest team that's been in the top flight, and they almost went down. So for me, they just totally botched it. And they have like actual talent on that team. They have the England goalkeeper. They have a guy who probably starts for Brazil. I know Brazil now has a guy from Real Madrid that I cannot remember his name right now, but you'll remember his name. Brazil has other options, but I still think Richarlison, like, he's that's the kind of guy you want in a dogfight. He's going to like grind out a goal, dark arts from minute zero. He's going to annoy you, etc. I think it's a much better team than what they showed, and it's actually quite crazy that they, you know. So for me, they were the underachievers. The overachievers for me, I don't know. I'm kind of caught. Like, Brighton, I think, is a really good one. I think West Ham is still really impressive to me. I actually have not looked at their wage bills, so I can't really say anything. But that team just, like, you look at it on paper, and I'm like, how are they where they are? You know, they're up. If you look at the other teams ahead of them, the six teams ahead of them are all the teams that would go to the Super League. Huge brands. City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, Manchester United. And then West Ham. Not saying that West Ham's not a big brand. It is a global brand, but not on that level. And they once again have been competitive throughout the season, a 38-game season. So I think that they're still overachieving. And that's why I guess I'll give it to them. I think the other ones, obviously, Brighton, you know, Brighton really. Like, that's really impressive what they've done. I will say, for John's bet, I said Arsenal would finish in ninth. Arsenal finished in fifth with 69. For them to have finished in ninth, they would have needed 51 or lower in a goal differential. So I was 18 points. I was six games off. And I blame that on Leicester sucking, on Wolves not really picking it up, not to where I thought they were going to be, and on Everton. Those three teams nick some points off. You know, Arsenal and Arsenal don't win some other games. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But I lost that bet to John. So that's kind of like my, I think my overachiever is actually West Ham. And I know you're like, you know, West Ham, whatever. But they, like, you look at that also, team, I'm just not impressed.
They achieved exactly what I thought they'd achieve.
Really?
I thought
they overachieved.
Here's why. Here, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because down the stretch, they did exactly what I said they would do. They fell apart. And because they didn't have the depth. They didn't have the depth to go deep into Europa to play. They made it to the semifinal. That's great, and I actually that's awesome for them. Like, I think that their play was to go all in on that, and that's what they did. And it was at the kind of they suffered in the league because of their Europa League, and I will not back off on that. They had, you know, Declan Rice playing way too many minutes. They had Soufal and Socek. They had guys that are just workhorses, but they cannot play every game. And who's going to back them up? There's not a lot of guys. Lanzini, like, come on, like. Lanzini's
but that's
score
what I'm
worldie.
Saying. But that's, like, what I'm saying. They went to the semifinals of a European competition.
I think that's achieved because Europa's kind of trash, and their path to the semifinals was actually easy. And they also had a guy who, I mean, their standout player was Bowen, right? And I think if that team had two or three more players that were able to, like, another good striker, another good attacking midfielder, and then another good defender, that team would have contested fourth, right? As opposed to, like, falling back and having to settle for Europa. They did exactly what I said they were going to do. Down the stretch, they drop a lot of points.
Because I still think that they overachieved, though. I look at that team, and I'm just not impressed. I think Leicester's a better team, but they didn't show up. I think Wolves a better team. They just didn't show up. Everton shit the bed.
I don't think Wolves are better. I think Leicester on paper were better, and they had a bunch of injuries. Like, Vardy was hurt, Madison was hurt, Tielemans didn't play particularly great this whole season.
I mean, Leicester finishes 2 points, 4 points behind them, and Wolves only 5 points behind, and Brighton only 5 points behind. I think Brighton's a way more of an overachiever. I just want to vary it and create a different argument. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's totally. It's interesting it'll be interesting to see how West Ham bolsters their squad with Europa again on the horizon, if they're able to keep Rice and keep Soufal, keep Souček, and I'm sure Antonio will stay. It'll be interesting to see who they pick up, because David Moyes, obviously, he's well liked there, and I think he's going to stick around, and that team is like a grinded out type of team, and I don't know if they'll be able to hold on to Bowen either, because I'm sure some clubs will be like, oh, how much will it take, you know, to get him? Even like Conte is like Bowen. So it's like, I think Bowen's homegrown too. He's got that English tax on him. So they're a fascinating team because they seem kind of destined to always be seventh to fifth, right? And so, because it's so hard to break into that top four now with City and Liverpool being so dominant. And then Chelsea, you know, obviously now it's kind of in turmoil with how they're going to spend their money, but it seems like they're still going to have like a war chest to spend, you know, and people want to go to Chelsea because it's a historic club. So it's hard. It's going to be hard breaking in that top four every year. And it's not a lock, you know? So there's like six, five teams probably vying for that top four. And it's just like, it's going to come down to injuries and gelling and all that stuff. So, do you want to go to the next question I had? Did we have any more answers on that, or that was it?
No, my last thing, I think that was it. My last thing was that Manchester United finished on zero goal differential. West Ham finished on plus nine and just only finished behind United, you know, 2/3 of the game or 2 points. That is just a swift kick in the shin, because things go differently on that last game week for West Ham. They, you know, they're in. It's just tough. I feel for West Ham, I guess I'm saying. Because I guess my point is, if West Ham finish in that sixth place, maybe you're more like, okay, they overachieved. And I'm sitting here like, it was one game. It was 2 points.
Yeah.
And they had 9 points over United. Not saying that I'm using United as a brand, not where they currently are, to make that argument, because currently where they are is not a very good team. But anyways, you want to go to the next question?
Yeah, my other question was just pretty much the same thing, but like player-wise. So which player underachieved and which player overachieved?
Underachieved is easy. If you do not say Romelu Lukaku, you did not watch the season. He scored 5 goals after coming from Italy, where they have like statues of him, and everyone thought he was going to be great, and everyone tells me how good the Italian league is. And the Italian league was just won by Olivier Giroud and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, two guys whose median age, let me see if I can do the math in my head, is about 38. So I don't want to hear about how great the Italian league is when those two guys are your strike force. Those two guys can't even get run in the Prem, not even on any of the top six teams.
I'm going to agree. I agree with you. Underachieved was Romelu Lukaku. He for him to achieve, in my book, my mind, just because I've seen him lug around hobble around the Serie A.
Lug around
his body, his giant, like, husk meat sack in the box. I was expecting 10 to 15 goals. And that's because, I thought I was being generous, because I thought like Mount would get him the ball in the box, and like, you know, Ziyech would give him some service, and he couldn't even move to get in positions to you know, head the ball in the net. It was brutal to watch. Actually painful to watch. There were some games where he like would touch the ball 3 times, like, and one of them was a kickoff. It was bad, really bad. It just kind of like exacerbated and kind of like put a spotlight on Chelsea's inability to score this season. And yeah, they didn't get scored on a lot, so their goal differential was fine, and it kept them, you know, their defense kept them up. But there were some games were just pretty hard to watch, you know. You need to go to. There were some games where their defense didn't play well, and they needed to score some more goals than the other team, and they just weren't able to do it. I.e., the Brentford game.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think if you look at this thing and you're who's the most underachieved, it's got to be him. He's one of the, if not the most expensive player in the Premier League, other than maybe if De Bruyne goes, if Salah goes, if Mane goes, if Harry Kane goes, he's in the top 5 most expensive. And he scored 5 goals. Each one of his goals worth $30 million. Are you kidding me? Let's go to the next one, because I don't want to go down my tirade here. Who's your? I think you're overachiever, Sonny.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to the heart, and it's Sonny, because he on a team. This is why I'm gonna make a case for Sonny that a lot of people think he's a purple patch merchant, meaning he's basically just lucky, right? He's got Kane giving them service, deflections. He's hitting the ball in at the 6-yard box, this and that. He's not talented enough. He's not good enough. And this, you know, he doesn't show up for some games. He's invisible against good teams and blah, blah, blah. He carried the team. He consistently scored all season. He signed a contract extension during the Nuno times, or like right when Nuno got sacked, committed to this club, and then stepped it up and was the leading goal scorer in the team, and still kicked in like 9 assists. When Kane wasn't scoring at the beginning of the season, he was the one scoring the goals, and you know, he wasn't expected to get the Golden Boot. He wasn't even on anybody's radar to get the Golden Boot, and he gets it. And the last game of the season kind of just like puts the cherry on top, where like he literally had to go out and score a brace to lock it down. And he would have been the outright winner if Salah didn't get subbed on and score to tie it. So he knew he needed like 2 goals to basically take the lead. And maybe it was a little bit of his teammates helping him out, this and that. But at the end of the day, he put in a freaking banger, dude. He put in a banger from like 20 yards out. And then he put in just a very good like through ball from Mora, and he just slotted it in, just a striker's finish. And I was impressed by him. He kind of just all season just put him in, was consistent, never like went down. I think he was only injured like one or two games, and he was healthy, and it was great. It was great to see. So I will agree with that, and that would be my pick.
So I also think what San did is absolutely insane. If you look at his numbers, he finishes the season with 23 goals and 7 assists. And let's get into after why I think Kevin De Bruyne winning is kind of tough, the PFA player. My overachiever, and I can't tell if he's overachieving or this is just how he plays, because I do think he's such class. And I'm not sure if this is overachiever or just a guy I actually really liked watching all season long, and that was Cancelo. He is just such fire all the time. And I know that everyone thinks Kevin De Bruyne, or they're going to pick someone else in City. That dude is fire. He's incredible on the ball. And if you just look at – let me go to fantasy really quick, and this is where I think we should honestly be when we talk about, you know, some of the PFA player comments or analysis here. If you go to – God, can I even find it? He's one of the most picked people in the entire thing, Cancelo is. Selected 41% of the time.
That's incredible.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost – a really good player like is selected in like 35. Yeah.
So, and he's a defender. So Cancelo for me – and once again, I can't tell if it's an an overachiever – it's more just like I just want to give him praise, and I think he deserves a couple minutes of like comments, because he's the most
he was on my fantasy team. He stayed on my fantasy team from week one to the end. Like,
he's just the most complete outside back I think there is in the Premier League, and that's saying a lot, because you have Trent Alexander-Arnold, you got Robertson, you got Reece James, who I think is an absolute boss. You got Tierney, who was injured towards the end of the season. Kyle Walker's not bad. Maybe going forward, he's not as good. But Cancelo, I just thought he was absolutely incredible. And I'm hoping – well, I'll be right if he doesn't give the same effort next season and he doesn't come out and shine like he did. I mean, he kept Zinchenko on the bench basically all season. So that to me was it. I do want to talk, though, about the PFA player, because I thought it was just such a snub that Sonny doesn't win it. And I think the bigger issue is that the FA is obsessed with making sure that the person who wins it is on the winning team. Mm-hmm. I just think that that's just bad. The NBA, we talked about this, the NBA doesn't do that. They say, who's the pound-for-pound best player? And the Joker has won it 2 years in a row. And Denver doesn't even get anywhere in the playoffs. And before, Giannis would win it, and he wasn't winning championships then. KD won it, and he won it when he was on Oklahoma. I feel like I'm right about that. So you don't have to – Russell Westbrook won it, and he's never touched a title and never will. So they're looking at the pound-for-pound best player, and they're deciding on that. So I think the FA really has to get off whoever wins, because otherwise you're just going to keep picking guys from City or guys from Liverpool. And I do not think pound-for-pound, that's the best player. So what Sonny did with the team that he had is absolutely – they don't have a 10. They don't have a fucking 10. They don't have a bunch of little skillers. They don't have Gundogan. They don't have all these little dudes just running around. And they started the season off under Nuno. It was a shit show. So for me, I think the FA has to just completely redo that. And I think the thing that maybe we want to dive into is I do think that there's a lot of racism in this. I do think that, you know, we're not going to choose guys who are Muslim or who are from Africa or who are Asian, you know? And I've said it, and people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. But, like, it's not. I don't even think Salah or Mane are going to be considered in the golden ball conversation. And yeah, Karim Benzema is honestly a statue right now and amazing. But pound for pound, you have to choose right now? I don't know. That's just Benzema Madrid. I don't know if he does it for other people. You can put Salah anywhere or Mane anywhere, and I think they'd do it. But anyways,
what got me about the whole Sun thing was that he wasn't even nominated for the fan PFA. And that actually speaks a lot. Whether people don't really like Spurs, fine. It's a very divisive thing going on with fan base and how they feel about other players. It seems like, you know, if you have a very big fan base, they're all going to vote for the player they want. Nobody from the City fan base is going to vote for somebody from the Liverpool fan base. I mean, Liverpool players, right? Player pool. So it's kind of like, where are you getting like the most amount of votes for that? But it is questionable that, like, you know, in that list of favorite players, who was it on there that wasn't even like, that shouldn't even been the conversation? Connor Gallagher, right? Connor Gallagher's in there.
I mean,
and we're talking about.
I just don't understand it.
Ranked,
I just don't understand it.
It doesn't make sense. But then the biggest kick in the shins is like when the next couple of days, De Bruyne wins the PFA. On the right before, it was right before they won the title, right?
Yeah, that to me is just tough. I mean, if you just look at, so De Bruyne scores 15 goals and has 7 assists. Eight assists on a team that's a juggernaut, right? They lose 3 games all season. He's on a team that has 60 to 70% possession every single game. They have a coach who just has them playing Clockwork Orange football. It's unbelievable. And he scores, some of those are PKs. And then, so he has 15 and 8, which is 23. And then you look at Son, who's on Spurs. And if you're a City fan, you think you're much better than Spurs. You know, this is not like, and for a good reason, because you are, you're much better. You're 30 points or 25 points, you know, 20, what was the number I said? 22 points ahead in the table. Son's got 23 goals and 7 assists, and all of them are bangers. All of them are like on the counter. All of them are probably in games where they're not having 60 and 70% possession. They're not taking 30 shots on goal.
Yeah. He's also the percentage wise. If you look at Tottenham Hotspur, they were the most accurate Premier League team in shooting the ball. Okay, so their guys are very skilled. All right, their Sonny is taking most of those shots in pressure or running with the ball. Okay, it's the Spurs. I think barely ever, unless they were playing like Norwich or one of the lower teams, they barely ever would crack 55 to 60% possession. They're very a 50-50 possession, if not a counter team. They allowed City to have possession. They allowed Liverpool to have possession. They allowed them, and they knew they could get them on the counter. That's the style of play they have, and it's much harder to score goals that way. You're not going to rack up, you know, all these goals. You're not going to do all this, you know, freaking rondos in the middle of the field with your midfielders. It's just Kevin De Bruyne on another team. That's the question you have to ask yourself. If Kevin De Bruyne goes and plays for a mid to upper level upper level club, any team basically besides Liverpool or City, does he do what he does? And I think the answer to that, ask yourself, Scheimer, ask yourself, does he do the same thing?
Or and just switch him. Just switch him. Just put KDB on Spurs and put Son on City. That's a simple. Once you do that and you really think about it, KDB is not doing what he's doing at City. The other thing that I don't have the stat on, unfortunately, is how many of these goals were go-ahead goals? How many of these goals were game-changing goals? Because like Sonny's fifth goal, the banger, doesn't change the game. You know what I mean? The game's done. Like, how many of these are tap-ins when it's 5-0? That's not a stat I have, but my feeling is that because Spurs just scored so many less goals. I mean, Son scores, let's put this in perspective here. And there's probably other people we should be making this argument for. Mo Salah is another one. He had a freakish season. Actually, we'll come back to Mo Salah. But if you look, Son scores 23 goals out of Tottenham's 69 goals. Literally a third of their goals. Kevin De Bruyne scores 15 goals out of City's 99 goals, 15%, half of the amount of percent that Son had scored for his team, a team that had way less possession and that finished way far down the table. So for me, pound for pound, you put Son on City, he's going to do even better than what Kevin did on City. Obviously now, they play two different positions. Kevin comes from the midfield, Son is a forward. But one of the things I thought was absolutely insane is that Liverpool lose, if we want to go with, oh, we only can take the top of the Prem to win this, Liverpool lose the season by one goal. And Mo Salah is not PFA player. He scores 23 goals and has 13 assists to Kevin's 15 goals and 8 assists. If we're just going by those two stats alone, he blows Kevin out of the water.
Yeah, just people are going to make the argument that he does intangible things like he's defending or he's doing blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't do that. He's an attacking, he's basically an attacking midfielder in my mind. And he's not, when you watch him on the field, De Bruyne.
Oh, yeah. He's a 10.
Yeah, he's a 10. So he's, so people are going to say, well, he creates chances. He's got a lot of like second, you know, assists kind of thing.
And their argument is strong if you look at the last day. I mean, he whips the ball across in an unbelievable world-class ball, and Gundogan gets on the end of it, and there's the title. Anyway, I think there's some things that people need to think about, and I think the FA has totally got to change.
It can't just be
the winning team. It cannot
the other
be
thing
the winning
you have
team.
To ask yourself, the other thing you have to ask yourself, does City win the title if De Bruyne's not in the team? And the answer to that, I think really, the answer to that is yes. Yeah. I think they do. I think they do win the title. I still think they win the title. Maybe they don't win. Okay, maybe they don't win the title, but at least they're not like dropping down the table. If Spurs don't have Son on that team,
that's a third of the goals.
Third of the goals. Who? Nobody else is scoring those goals, and they finish eighth, ninth.
Yeah. If
talk
City
about
don't
a guy,
have,
it's just a guy Kevin, who's making a bigger impact on the team and having a bigger impact on what that team's doing.
Yeah.
To me, that's PFA Player of the Year. That's not that. That's just. That's the player of the year. It doesn't matter. It's the impact he has on the league and this team. KDB does not have the same impact that Son has. Because people are going to disagree with me, and that's fine. Like, they can disagree with me, but that team is built with 10s. That's all 10s. City is 10s.
I don't think many people are going to disagree with you. I mean, you look at Salah's numbers, you look at Son's numbers, and there's arguments that both of them had a greater impact on their teams and influenced their teams more than Kevin. And I don't think many people are going to argue with that, to be honest. So anyway, why don't we...
And he's the nicest guy, like literally in the league.
Son is the nicest human being.
He's the nicest human being. Yeah.
This isn't to say that Kevin's not a nice guy.
Not a nice guy, but like you got to root for Son. Nobody like, that's just, it's such a, like a kick in the shins for him. I know he doesn't care and like whatever. It's just another like stupid little mantelpiece, but I'm glad he won the Golden Boot and he got that. And because I think he cared about that significantly, you know, because I think that was like a big feather in his cap, because he loves Spurs, and to be able to put, I think he like enjoyed putting the team on his back this year, you know, being this like a little bit, being more of the center of attention than to Kane. Like Kane still had a great season. I think he finished fourth or fifth in the Golden Boot. He really stepped it up at the end, and the partnership they have obviously is integral to what Son does, but I think to have some of the limelight be on Son was nice to see. You know, he's been in a way been in Kane's shadow for a couple of years. So,
well, forever and seemingly.
Awesome. Well, look, you know, this is probably the last pod for a little while. I don't think there's much more to talk about this season. I am very intrigued. There's one little thing that we didn't talk about from the Premier League that I wanted to bring up, and that's, and I think it can shape how this summer is going to go for some teams and how they're going to prepare for next season. And that is the change of the increasing the amount of subs to 5 substitutes per game from 3 to 5. I think it really benefits, obviously, teams like City and Liverpool and the teams that have deep benches. But I think it also, you know, it might prompt some teams that have been, you know, kind of, they might have been apt to sell a player, now hold on to a player because they know they're going to need, they don't have somebody readily in the backup and then to back up that player. So there may be, and then, you know, you're going to go see Liverpool, City, Chelsea, and Spurs bolster at every position, right? Or attempt to, right? In order to, because you can change an entire game with an extra 2 subs, you know? And you're also going to need, if you're playing in Europe, you're going to need depth. So you're going to need the 5 subs. You're going to need the depth in Europe. And I think it really is going to change, I think, how a lot of coaches strategize their lineup, because you can do a lot with 5 as opposed to just 3.
I also think just because you have 5 doesn't mean you use 5. Over the season, teams may not even use it. I mean, the game's been played with 3 subs forever, for probably like more than, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years. I don't know when the change was made. But I don't know if all coaches will use it. I mean, if you're winning, why would you change something unless you want to lock down? You're only going to make a couple changes. The more changes you make, the more likely you are to create a Murphy's Law situation. So we'll see.
Well, 100%. But I also think that there aren't there aren't a lot of teams in the league that can make five change, like can go to the fourth sub and be like, oh, this player is going to actually make a difference. While City, Liverpool,
Chelsea,
maybe Chelsea, maybe Spurs are going to be like, well, who, like, I got all the depth in the bench.
United, you know, Arsenal can also do this too.
Yeah, Arsenal, they may not. I mean, they're my.
They've got solutions.
So it's like, I'm just saying, like, it might create more, and that's why a lot of teams might be opposed to it, like the lower level clubs. They just don't have the depth, and it actually does give an advantage. Now, whether that's in practice, that's actually going to like play out this. I don't know if it's actually going to impact as much, but it might impact the way that the teams plan for the season, right?
The other side of that would be that the teams that you've mentioned, they'll say the top six teams that are playing in Europa and Champions League, want to keep a low sub count. So that way they get guys 100% fresh for the games. There's the other argument there. So
sure,
we'll see how that plays out. This is going to be probably the last podcast for maybe a couple weeks. So we'll see everyone mid-June. And we're going to get back in the studio. We're going to have John Scheimer on. He's going to roast us because I'm sure he thinks Arsenal's going to win the league next year. What else? We'll see everyone.
There's some friendlies. There's a bunch of friendlies going on all over the world.
Club friendlies. Italy-Argentina game is also going to happen soon. Also, when we come back in June, we're probably going to have a better idea of the week and the dates that we're going to go to England. So we'll let everyone know about that if people want to join us. So there's that.
That's it. I mean, thanks again, Jared, for, I think, this is season three, Boys and Bolos podcast.
This is season three, which is kind of crazy. We did one, like, quarter season after the pandemic. We did one full season. No, this is our second full season.
Yeah, but I'm calling it season three.
Oh, for sure, season three.
I'm calling it season three. I like it. Season three is wrapped up. We really hit our stride. I've really developed my good podcast voice. And I think the fans come to expect my sultry tones.
Oh my God. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Boys and Bolos podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Twitch, at Boys and Bolos.
If you'd like to be a guest, please reach out. You can hit us on any of the social media accounts that Jeff just mentioned, or email us directly at boysandbolos@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
But who did actually beat you in 1v1, Kyle?
Ooh.
Who? Who?
I don't know.
In the world, who beat you 1v1? Jack!
me, when I was at Aston Villa, that's why Pep signed me.